It's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
Welcome to Chinook Profiles. I'm Paula Schiller with the second program on the Tundra Times and publisher Thomas Richards, Jr. It's common knowledge that the Tundra Times has had its financial woes. Its situation has been described as fragile. But somehow, it always manages to get along with a little help from its friends.
We certainly wouldn't have survived for this length of time without help from our friends. This hasn't been the most profitable newspaper in the world. We've had some tremendous losses over the years. I think we've been in a period the last 2 years or so where that trend is reversing a bit.
Things are getting better for the Tundra Times. The paper has gone from a $70,000 deficit in 1977 to its first year of profit since 1973. It's grown from a circulation of 1,400 to more than 6,000. Richards hopes to see the circulation rise to 15,000, which could be the point of readership saturation. To accomplish this, changes are forever being contemplated.
Probably going to option number 3,672 at this point. It's been a great experiment, and it's always a continuing experiment, I think. In terms of professional standards, I think you try to do the best you can. But the paper itself is a very unique, it's a unique business. It's not only a business, it's an institution. We have people that depend quite a bit on us for information. And in trying to meet our responsibility to provide for the informational needs, we have to work pretty hard. Sometimes it's discouraging, sometimes it's rewarding.
You recommend it in your list of careers?
I highly recommend it. I recommend it a great deal. I'm concerned that there are not more journalists developing in rural areas, people coming from villages, rural Alaska, paying attention to careers in media. A lot of media plays a very important function in the decision-making process. The dissemination of information plays a very important role in shaping the public opinion. And it's important to have people from the villages, native people, assuming careers in journalism. Because we have the Tundra Times is kind of solitary right now in its efforts to provide for dissemination of information in a way that's sensitive to the people in the villages, to the culture. And if we had a promising young crop of new journalists, I think it would make our job a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
There's also tremendous opportunities in broadcast media, in daily newspapers. We do need young people to come along and to take up careers in journalism.
A journalist looking for a job at the Tundra Times should be prepared to work hard in less than glamorous surroundings. The paper's income does not go into office furniture or fancy decor. The office is noisy. It's on the second floor of an otherwise abandoned-looking building at 639 I Street in Anchorage. You reach it by way of a wooden staircase on the outside. On the inside, the five full-time employees are squunched together in three rooms. And the day I was there, some outside consultants were taking up precious space in evaluating the financial status of the paper and suggesting directions for the future. Some changes are already on the drawing boards. Soon, Tundra Times readers will be picking up a slightly different newspaper.
It'll be different, yes. It's going to look different for one. I can give you a bit of an idea. We're not ready at this point to make a formal announcement. But we're in the process of redesigning our format. The paper probably will not be the same size it is now, so 17-inch tabloid. Be a tabloid size and probably a bit smaller. A bit smaller in sheet size, and hopefully a little bit bigger in number of pages, a little bit thicker. I think we'll have a great deal more in terms of development of the news end of the operation. Currently we have just Mr. Babb on full-time as editor, and we have somebody on half-time to assist him in another part of the state. We have some stringers, some who are paid, some who are not. Most of the development work that's gone on at the paper the last couple of years has been in the area of business management and in the area of advertising and circulation development. We've increased the circulation substantially, and we've increased the advertising substantially. We haven't paid that much attention to the product itself. And we're now in that position. We have to keep pace with the state of the art also in the news business. We have a very difficult responsibility. The world of native affairs is a lot more complex than it was 10 years ago, even 5 years ago, or 15 years ago. We have we're not the only ones that are doing some self-searching, soul-searching. I think villages are trying to determine for themselves what functions they serve for their members. They have to decide. They're given the rights of self-determination. They're given some recognition as having some tribal status under, and perhaps this is a lot more complex than it need be, but because of new federal laws, we have something like 460 odd, I won't say, I shouldn't say odd, we have in excess of 450 tribal groups in Alaska, because we have the nonprofit native corporations, we have the regional profit corporations, we have all of the villages. Some of the villages have traditional councils, some have IRA councils, some are organized under state laws, second-class cities. We have a tremendous explosion in the number of native entities in the state, where as a few years ago we just had the Alaska Federation of Natives and its members. We have all the profits and the nonprofits. We have health corporations, we have housing authorities. And this has made things a lot more complex. Difficult for us to keep pace. Difficult for the native folks themselves to keep pace with all the demands that are placed upon them, the demands of self-government, which we as a people have fought hard for many years are beginning to be realized. But we have to develop the capability to manage not only governments, businesses, trying to maintain amicable and mutually beneficial relationships with the state and federal government. It's very complex.
Are you thinking of?
And we're the only outfit in town right now, so to speak, trying to cover it.
One last question. I mentioned that the Thunder Times has a personality, and this is a question that may not be the fairest one to ask you, but do you think you could describe the personality of the paper?
Howard Rock, the founder, used to struggle through this newspaper from week to week, and one of his closest friends once told me that on deadline day it was as if it might be an unfair comparison, as if it was a female woman that told me this, that he appeared to be giving birth every week. This paper, I think, has absorbed more energy from more people for such intangible results that it's like a hobby, I suppose, a very expensive, very taxing hobby. It's just it defies all logic, I think, for this newspaper to exist. Weekly newspapers, newspapers in Alaska at best, unless you're Mr. Atwood, are losing proposition. And when you have a newspaper that's owned by Native folks living in 200 some villages across the state, trying to cover as many significant events as possible with very limited resources, it is a very illogical, it defies logic to see it continue, but somehow it does. And I think that's what's one thing that has attracted a lot of people, and the interest of a lot of people, the energy of a lot of people, is that for a statewide newspaper to serve so few people in such a large area, it's kind of an impossible task. And that's I think that's what draws people to it. Plus we've got the thing we've got going for us is that I think we've got the finest people on earth living in the state. For a little newspaper to try to serve them with the resources we have, I think attracts very talented, very sympathetic people. We've just been very fortunate. I think the paper is going to be here for a while. A number of us will come and go. I certainly don't intend to remain publisher for a great deal longer. We've had a lot of turnover in the staff. I've resigned 5 times in the last 10 years, and hopefully this time, I'm pulling away this fall for a period of time, hopefully for a very long period of time. This paper belongs to the Native community, and it belongs to the people of rural Alaska. I think after all these years, they're beginning to appreciate the value of it and are taking more responsibility to assure that it stays around to meet the communications needs for regardless of who's sitting in this office from year to year, day to day.
Thomas Richards Jr., publisher of the Tundra Times. He'll be going to the Sorbonne University in Paris to do some comparative studies with Eskimos from Siberia and Greenland, and perhaps he'll write a book. He feels certain that the Tundra Times will be here when he gets back. You've been listening to Chinook Profiles. I'm Paula Schiller, and Chinook is a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks. Chinook.
It's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaska Natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles. Portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
Welcome to Chinook Patterns. I'm Paula Schiller. Ann Vick is the director of the Rural Secondary Program of the Alaska Native Foundation. She has worked with Elliot Wigington on the Foxfire Project and is the coordinator for Alaska's version of Foxfire, the Chemai Projects. All these come together as Ann explains how the Rural Secondary Program is developing high school courses designed to guide students through the problems they may encounter as village and corporation shareholders.
ANF was started right prior to the land claims settlement, about 68, partly to assist in obtaining that settlement. It had Ford Foundation support for about 10 years. And what the foundation existed primarily to do was to assist in the implementation of ANCSCA by providing training and by providing a statewide forum for research or for meetings or whatever else. And so I started I finished working with the Chemai programs through the Department of Education after the contract was completed in Southwestern and those projects were underway. I had decided I wanted to stay in Alaska. And the organization that I was working with, that Wig and I were both affiliated with, IDEAS, didn't have anything going on. So I started looking around to stay up here and started with the Native Foundation in August of 77. And at that point, they had just begun a brand new program to provide technical assistance to village corporations around the state that had enrollments of under 600. Because the larger ones like Bethel, Barrow, Dillingham have enough capital that they can hire people and have a staff. When you've got an enrollment in a village of maybe 100 people, you're not getting a lot of money. But you do have requirements for an annual audit. You've got to have attorneys for different things. You've got to still maintain checking accounts. And so the foundation started providing technical assistance to these 103 villages by first hiring about 15 people called field associates who are circuit riders. They each have 7 to 10 villages that they are responsible for, and the way they do the training is by going into the villages and working with each corporation on the areas that it's concerned with, because the corporations vary widely in terms of their levels of sophistication and their interests. And in some villages you walk in and their primary concern is setting up a filing system and getting a reasonably priced audit. And you walk into another village and they've already jumped those hurdles and they're looking for advice and investment decision making. So we put together materials to help train these 15 people. We had a 6-week training workshop at Alaska Pacific University last summer for them, and then they went out and started their traveling. Well, I, coming out of the background of working with the Foxfire and the Chemai programs, was very interested in the quality of what was going or not going into those village high schools, and particularly in the village high schools where you have 2 or 3 teachers that have to teach a whole curriculum. And people coming in from outside that are brand new, and they don't know Alaska. They certainly don't know the Native Land Claims Settlement. And so you have them charged with providing training to the kids when they don't have any background to do it. They have the inclination most often, but not the background. And so what happens is that the kids are shortchanged because they're not getting the kind of decision-making skills and the kind of exposure to issues that they should get as high school students to assume the responsibilities they're going to inherit as soon as they graduate. Because for most kids in village Alaska, they don't go on to 4 years of college to get that kind of exposure or get those kinds of decisions. So with all the materials the foundation has in the area of Alaska government and corporations and Native issues, what we're going to start with is beginning to put into the secondary classroom, aiming to start with at social studies, materials in those areas that will get the kids exposed earlier so that when they're voting shareholders at 18 and can be board members at 19, they'll have more depth to bring to it. Or even if they're just more informed voters in their corporation, or school board members, if they can make a good decision as a corporate board member, they can make a good decision as a school board member, and vice versa. So we're going to start with social studies because that's my particular area and where the foundation has a lot of information. But we get a lot of people saying, well, the land is critical, and we really would like to get some science materials. Because you take, for example, Northwest Arctic School District in Nana region. Nana would like to work along with Northwest Arctic in making at the high school level available some vocational courses in forestry, in aquaculture, in mining, in reindeer husbandry that are related to employment opportunities in the region. So that as high school kids, they could begin to explore whether or not they were interested in these things, and if they were, then opt maybe for an associate degree at Chukchi Community College in Kotzebue, or for a four-year degree at someplace else. And that every kid, no matter what he did after high school, would have a chance to take at least one general science course that related to the environment of the area. Again, it gets back to the fact that as shareholders and as citizens, they've got to make decisions on what to do with those lands. And if they have some background, they can deal with it more effectively. That's what we're going to try to do. The rural secondary program is starting there, but I think it's open to provide a range of services to village high schools in particular.
In developing the curriculum, Anne is going directly to the villages to test materials to find out what the teachers need and how much the students already know. This assessment process is now underway.
Alaska Native Foundation got an initial grant from the Department of Education, and primarily that money, which we got in the springtime this year, was to make contact with the school districts and find out which districts were interested in being initially involved in the program. Because the way we want to develop the materials is by working with the teachers and the students and the corporations and the IRA councils or the local government to make sure that what we're developing is relevant, because we could put together some beautiful materials that would end up shelved. Mm-hmm. And we want to make sure, for example, by talking to the village corporation leaders or to the mayor, that we can identify those particular understandings and skills that they feel that shareholders or citizens ought to have, so that we can design the materials to address those skills or specific knowledge that they have to have. And then put it into the classroom with kids and see again whether we've missed the mark, maybe where we've given them too much of stuff they already know, or presumed that they know about something that they need more background than we've included in the materials. And then after they're done, we'll make them available statewide. But next year we'll be working with 3 schools in the Northwest Arctic School District. We haven't identified the villages yet because in part we want to see where the highest interest is next year. And 3 schools in North Slope, which we have identified, which will be Wainwright, Barrow, and Atkinsuk. And then Craig High School draws kids from Craig and Kowak. The plan right now is that we'll spend the first semester of next year, after we've seen what the existing curriculums are in those schools, what they currently are teaching in social studies, what kind of materials they do have. The first semester will be the writing of some initial materials. We'll get into field testing second semester, but it'll be a continuous process. We'll be writing and field testing at the same time. And then hopefully expanding it out. It's a 5-6-10 year program. You know, there's only so much that can be turned out in 1 year. And because we're dealing with current issues, Like the corporations and like Alaska government and economy, they've constantly got to be added to and revised. But they will deal with a lot of decision making and with a lot of real life hands-on situations for the students. And generally the response has been very high. A lot of excitement and the kids feeling that they're dealing with important issues that are in their own villages and in their own regions rather than an abstract diagram of the way the state government is set up or a history of the land claim settlement, which is a necessary preface. But knowing the history doesn't really prepare them for the decisions that they'll make as stockholders. They've just got to have practice in decision making.
Students can get this practice from working with hypothetical problems, using examples of typical choices they may face as voters and future community leaders.
Well, a lot of it deals with cases, the case approach to teaching, which is where you give a group of students kind of set up some background. For example, a village corporation that is located in this and that place, and they have these resources to develop and this much money, and they have these different options of ways to go in spending their money or using their lands. And you set up a dilemma, a situation that has to have a solution. And then they talk about which ways they would go and why. And then the teacher has an instructional booklet where doesn't necessarily, because there aren't clear-cut answers to what a village should do with its lands or how it should invest its money. But just learning the questioning and the looking at the options, the teacher can then bring up things that the students might not have thought of. You know, have you thought of this, or have you considered this village over here that invested and this is what happened? Let's look at that and see how it might relate to what we could do. And then they come up with their recommended solution to the problem. And enough practice doing that, they become comfortable with being thrown dilemmas and talking about what they can do and identifying solutions. It would be designed so that a lot of local information would be inserted by the teachers and the students. There again, the students can go out and gather basic data on their own communities that they can fit in to the curriculum. You can take an example of at the post-secondary level, Kuskokwim Community College has for 4 years been running a land management training program as an associate degree at Bethel. And they are very interested in assisting Chukchi Community College in Kotzebue land management program. Now, the basic skills that a land manager needs, the map reading, the other skills, are not going to change. The facts he's dealing with in the Northwest are going to change from what he's dealing with in the Yukon Kuskokwim, but you can design a curriculum and insert. And we're going to make a lot of effort to design it so that the insertions are relevant to the village and to the region, and so that it's the responsibility of those students to help in making those insertions. But a lot of suggestions on how classroom activities can be tied back into actual village corporation operations, can be tied back into, if there's an issue, for example, that's in the village, a problem with transportation or a problem with communications or a problem with easements or whatever else, that the students will know who to go to get information on or a reaction from. So that as students, if they know that, they apply the same contacts as adults, as community leaders. And that's pretty much where we're heading.
Ann Vick, director of the Rural Secondary Program of the Alaska Native Foundation. She's heading toward 5 to 10 years of work on bringing a continuously updated and locally relevant curriculum on how to live with ANCSA to the rural high schools. For Chinook Patterns, I'm Paula Schiller, and Chinook is a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.